All right, it's so good to be here this morning. I'm glad you're here with us. If you have your Bibles, you can turn to the book of 2 Samuel, chapter 12. Now, as we get started here, a couple of things, a few announcements. One, we've been talking about the building and what's been going on with that over the past couple of weeks. And so it does look like it's a permit issue. We've went to go fill out some of the paperwork, and it looks like as long as we fill out this paperwork, get this permit, pay the $2,300 permit fee, then we can stay in this building. So we are taking care of all that. We'll submit the permit, all the paperwork this week with the payment, and been talking with the owner as well, and it looks like we're going to extend our stay here through next year. Everyone's excited, even the children. So that is a building update, and which is good news. And the second update is, so the Awakened Dojo is today, and there are still a few more spots left, so if anyone is interested in signing up and coming to be involved, we are going to have such a blast this afternoon. We have a good sign-up, and I am thrilled for these 2 hours together. This is just the first of four. So all about transformation, we're going to have some teaching, some discussion, and then there will be some practices for you to take home, all with the intent is that your life would be transformed and that your mind would be renewed and changed in the way in which Jesus spoke about. So that is going to be today. If you are interested in signing up and getting involved, I'll be in the back. Come find me today, and we can make that happen. We can make all your dreams come true here. Today to awaken. Now, today is week two of our Will the Real King David Please Stand Up series. And we are talking 5 weeks about the life of David in order to see what his complex and his ambiguous life has to teach us about our complex human journey. Because life isn't quite as simple as it's made out to be. Are you with me? Life's a lot more outside of the lines than the black and white lines that everyone so often tries to put us in. Life is complex, and sometimes there are no clear answers. And this is what we are looking at over these 5 weeks. What does David's story have to say to us about our stories and the human journey that's filled with all sorts of different emotions, like fear and rage and joy and hope and everything in between? So what does this story have to say for us today in our lives? Now, last week, we looked at one of the more familiar stories of David, Bathsheba, Uriah, and Joab. And today what I want to do is I want to look at a portion of that story that falls right in the middle of that larger story that we looked at last week. So if you need a refresher or if you weren't here last week, the story that we talked about, it began at the time when kings go off to war. And what did David do? He stays in the comfort of his palace and he sends all of his men out to fight a battle, to conquer a city, all so that he can make a name for himself and enlarge his kingdom so that he can increase in power. And so David's there. He's back home in Jerusalem while everyone else is off fighting this war. And he decides one evening to go take a rooftop stroll in order to survey his kingdom and look over his land. Ah, look at everything that I oversee. And all of a sudden, this lovely bathing beauty catches his eye, and he sends someone to find who is this woman. Finds out who she is, and so he goes and sends his mob squad to go pick her up. They bring her back to the temple where they have a night together. She becomes pregnant. David finds out about this. And so he has to do what you naturally do at this point. You orchestrate the death of her husband. And so Uriah is killed on the battlefield. Bathsheba is now a widow, husbandless. And so David takes her into his family, into his harem. And she becomes, I guess, number one wife, you might say. Bumps all the other wives down a notch here at this point in the story. I'm not making this stuff up. This is like right there. You can't even make this stuff up. And so this is where we're going to pick the story up here this morning, right when David's family grows. And I believe, go to the next slide quickly. This is, one more. Yeah, 12 starting in verse 1. And let's go back to the beginning, thanks. The Lord said, sent Nathan to David. Now, when Nathan came to David, he said, "There were two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb that he had bought. He raised it, grew up with him and his children. It shared his food, drank from his cup, and even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare a meal for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took this lamb that belonged to the poor man, and he prepared it for the traveler who came to him." Now, David heard this story, and he burned with anger against the man, against this rich man for what he had done. And he said to Nathan, "As surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die. He must pay for that lamb four times over because he did such a thing and he had no pity." And then Nathan looked right at David. Maybe he pointed his finger right at David and he said, "You are the man." And David said, "I know I am." Now, a couple things to look at here. This phrase, how it starts, when David hears this story, burned with anger. The exact Hebrew translation would be, "So was aroused the anger of David against the man greatly." This word greatly is the Hebrew word ma'od. And ma'od places an emphasis on something. So it takes what was said and it raises it up to the next level. So not was David just angry, but he was greatly angered. So this wasn't just a little bit of anger, like when someone kind of cuts you off on the highway anger. This is when someone cuts you off on the highway and then slams their brake on in front of you anger. Like, we're taking it to the next. Yeah, Josh knows exactly what I'm talking about. He is angry. There's a picture. Yeah, David's like going all green here. He's getting all Hulk. And what we're told here is that David doesn't just want this rich man to die for what he's done, but he wants him to pay four times. This is how it starts. You get a little bit angry, and then you don't want to just exact revenge or just have this person pay the punishment. You want to increase the punishment. This is what David's doing. Four times he wants this man to be paid back for what he's done. You might say David's a little irked. David's going a little hulkish here at this point in the story. Now, why is it that David's anger is so aroused? Why is David so angry? I would suggest it's because of this inner guilt and shame that David has within himself. Think about what has just happened in this story. David has just gotten another man's wife pregnant. He tried covering it up, tried making everything go away. That didn't work. And so then he has to take it to the next level, and he has to make sure that this man, her husband Uriah, dies in battle so that he isn't found out. David's been carrying around this massive guilt over what he's done for weeks, maybe even months at this point in the story. And at this point, David has Area 51 this entire thing. Like, he's quarantined the whole area. He's brought the hazmat team in, make sure there's no more fallout. He's buried everything so deep. He's thought that he has run from this. He's thought that he's done everything to cover his tracks. This is it. It's buried. It's gone. I will never have to think about this again. This is never going to come to the surface. No one will ever find out about this. He thinks he's escaped from this. All right, that was a little blip. That was a little hiccup. But we've gotten beyond this. Now I can go back to how life once was. We can go back to normal life. But the truth is, you can never fully run from that which you don't own. For weeks, for months, this has been hanging like a dark cloud over David, following him wherever he goes. Maybe it's been keeping him up at night. Maybe David's turned into an insomniac where he just can't sleep because he keeps replaying this over and over in his mind, thinking, if only I had done things differently. If only I wasn't on the roof that night. If only she wasn't there that night. If only I had enacted a little self-discipline that night. David's been thinking about this, and it's been playing over and over in his mind. And so when Nathan, this prophet, comes forward to David, and he tells this story that parallels what David has just been through, David jumps at this. Because this story that Nathan's telling has hit a tender spot in David's soul. It's hit a wound that David has been carrying around with him. I remember when I first tore my ACL, I went to go see the doctor. And what they do is they do an exam of your knee, and the doctor starts pushing around your knee in all these different places. Oh, is it sore here? Yeah, a little sore. How about this spot over here? It's a little sore, this spot, yeah. How about this? Whoa! I didn't even have to, as soon as he pressed on that one spot where I had injured my knee, I jumped off the exam table. Has this ever happened to you? Where a doctor is pushing, 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 then they hit that spot, and you jump up. This is what happened to David. Nathan hit him right at this tender spot, this tender wound, hurt that he's been carrying with him for weeks. And as soon as David heard this, he jumped. He couldn't contain himself. He couldn't keep it in any longer. How much of the pain that we inflict upon ourselves or upon others is a direct result of our inability to fully own our stories. How much of the pain that we inflict on others through our actions, our words, or even ourselves is a direct result of our inability to own all that we've been through. Now, I don't think that a prophet... You're not going to have these wounds and these hurts exposed by a prophet very often, but I do believe that other people expose to us our vulnerabilities and our weaknesses and our hurts and our wounds. And so I want to share with you two stories here this morning. And the first, I'll call this story Gym Guy Story. And I was telling Steph this story this week. I had never told her this story before. And as I was telling her the story, I'm like, why am I telling this story again on Sunday? But I'll tell you the story because I think this brilliantly captures this. So a couple of years ago, I noticed that there was this guy who goes to the gym where I go to. And we would be there in the mornings, generally the same time each morning. Some days, I would see him when I was leaving after I had worked out and he'd be coming to the gym. Other days, we'd both be getting to the gym at the same time. Then there were those days where I would just be coming to the gym and then he would be leaving the gym. And the more I saw him, there was something about this guy that just irritated me. Now, I had never met him before. I never spoke to him. I still have never spoken to him at this point. I never heard him speak in the locker room. He was very quiet in the locker room. He never spoke to anyone. But for some reason, I had this growing dislike for this man. Has this ever happened to you before? And so I started thinking about this. It really started to bother me. Why does this man bother me so much? So I just started asking myself, what's going on here? What has he ever done to me? Why is it that he's really... And then it dawned on me. There'd be those days when I would come to the gym and I would do my workout, take a shower, ready to leave, and he'd be coming in with his bag just about to start his workout. And on those days, I felt great about myself. And I would look at him and be like, look at that lazy guy coming to the gym now. I'm all done with my workout and he's just getting started. And then there'd be those days where he'd be done with his workout, he'd be leaving the gym, and I would just be getting started. And it was in those moments when my dislike for this man just grew off the charts. It was like the dislike level just kept going deeper and deeper. And what I realized, I had nothing against this man, but I was angry at myself. And I was displacing all of my anger on this guy. See, I was angry with myself because I felt that I wasn't disciplined enough. Oh, I should be getting up earlier. I should be getting to the gym earlier. Why didn't I move faster in the morning? Why'd I hit the snooze button once or twice or however many times I hit it that morning? I should have gotten up, had my breakfast, gone to the gym. And so all this anger I had at myself because I wasn't living up to this expectation that I had for myself, I was just channeling it and placing it on him. He was simply the body upon which I was placing all this anger that I had at myself. This ever happened to you before? See, I think if we go to the next slide, how we view or treat others often has less to do with them and more to do with how we see ourselves. I think this is why we need an other. This is why the idea of scapegoat, it's something that has been in existence for thousands of years, because we all need someone upon which to place all of that stuff that we carry within ourselves. We need someone to take all the feelings, the shame, the guilt, the anger that we have, the lack of kindness and grace that we show ourselves, and we need to be able to place it on someone else or on another group. This is why we'll often make people feel, we'll make people inferior to ourselves. We'll make them a them or an other so that we can feel superior. We can feel better about ourselves, because when we're directing all of our anger and our guilt and our shame outwards, we don't have to deal with all the insecurities that we feel boiling up within ourselves. We don't have to actually wrestle with our inner demons when we're looking outwards. And we're looking at everyone else. Ooh, what is wrong with them? Look at those guys. Look at that group over there. There's an absolutely brilliant quote by Hermann Hesse, the German author. He says, if you hate a person, you hate something in him that is part of yourself. What isn't part of ourselves doesn't disturb us. Absolutely brilliant. Whenever there's someone that disturbs me, I now start asking myself the question, what is it about them that disturbs me? Because it's almost like they're a mirror reflecting back to us something about ourselves that we don't want to be true. And so as long as they have this quality about themselves, we don't have to think about that quality in us. See, this is the thing about road rage. Road rage is never about what happens on the road. It's about the conversation that you had with your spouse the night before. Or it's about the fact that you're late again and you're angry with yourself because you were late and you couldn't get out of the house early enough. And so you just flip that person off or you cut them off and you displace all of that anger on them. Or someone has said something to you or something has happened to you that makes you feel really, really small. So you get on the road in your SUV and you assert yourself because you feel powerful. And in this part of your life, you're feeling really, really small, but at least in your SUV, you can feel really, really big and powerful. How much of the pain that we inflict on others, how much of the pain that we inflict on ourselves, the lack of grace that we show ourselves, is caused by our inability to simply own our stories and own all that we've been through in life. Now, a second story. I had a friend who, she actually grew up in a Mormon home. And the Mormon religion is, it's very strict. And there's a lot of rules. At least in this family there were. They followed everything to a T. And so this girl grew up in the home, and at 18, she decided to leave her parents' home because she said, I no longer believe this form of religion. I can no longer adhere to these rules. I can no longer be a part of this tribe. I can't go to this church any longer. She said she's grown, and she had changed. She evolved. She grew to see things differently. And she said, the only way that I'm ever going to escape this pressure that my family and my tribe and my church are placing on me is for me to leave Utah and get as far away as possible. So she moved all the way to New York. And then what started happening for her is she started looking at anybody who embodied some of those old beliefs that she had with complete disdain. So anyone who embodied any of the beliefs or the practices, anyone who held a particular social stance, she was the complete opposite of that. And she looked at anyone, even anyone who went to a church, or anyone who was a part of religion, like it would make her twitch a little bit here. Because for her, that group of people were reminding her of where she had come from. And she wanted to run as far away as possible from her past. This is why all human developmental theorists will say the same thing. Whenever we grow and we evolve in our humanity, in our being human, we look at where we came from with great disdain because we're embarrassed. It's like the sixth grade yearbook photo. How many of you want to bust that out? How many of you want to come here with a name tag and your sixth grade yearbook photo right here on your chest? Braces, fluffy hair, the shirt that your mom bought for you. Yeah. Wherever we've come from, so often in life, we try to run from it. And whenever we are brought back to something that reminds us of where we've been, it causes feelings of embarrassment or pain or guilt or shame. But for my friend, the only thing that this was doing, her running and her fleeing, it was creating a divided life. Because she was trying to run from a part of her that was true. You can't run from your past. You can try. You can try to bury it. You could try to push it down. You could try to pretend like it's not a part of you. But your past will always follow you. And you will only ever become fully integrated and fully whole. You will only ever be able to heal your past when you own it. And you acknowledge it, and you take responsibility for it. You don't need to like where you've been. You don't need to like what you've been through. You don't need to like that old sixth grade yearbook photo, but you do need to own it. This is me. This is where I've been. This is what has shaped me up until this point in my story. This is where I came from. That's why LeBron is always like, I'm from Akron. Like, not many people would proudly say, I'm from Akron. Yet LeBron proudly states, I'm from Akron. It's his past. It's where he came from. It's what has shaped him and made him the person that he is today. You can't run from where you've been. Now, in David's story, David has been running. And then Nathan comes up to him. And he tells them this story, and David tries running from it and burying it and pretending and continuing to live this divided life. And all of a sudden, Nathan points the finger and says, you are the man. And how does David respond at this point? He has two options. He can continue to say, no, I'm not. That wasn't me. I never did anything like that. You don't even know what you're talking about, Nathan. Or he could stop and he could own it. Verse 13, then David said to Nathan, I'm wondering if there was a long pause here when David said, you're the man. If David was, imagine all those thoughts. Okay, what should I do? What should I? And David finally said, I have sinned against the Lord. It's me. Yeah, you're right. This is what I did. This is what I've been running from. This is what I've been pretending isn't a part of my story. but I've sinned. I'm ready to stop running and own that which has been true this entire time. I'm ready to stop running and to finally deal with what I've done. And then Nathan replied, "The Lord has taken away your sin." The only way to ever be fully whole, the only way to receive a healing for the wounds and the hurts that we carry around is for us to stop and admit, that's a part of me. I've been trying to avoid it. I've been trying to pretend like it's something separate from myself. But no, this is actually a part of who I am. And now we can start dealing with this. See, I think the number one thing that God desires for you is your wholeness. It's your reconciliation. This is why God sends Nathan to David, because God wants David to be whole. And the only way that David will ever be whole is for him to accept and acknowledge what's been true. Now, I don't think, like I've said, I don't think God's going to send a prophet to you this week. You're not going to get a phone call from Prophet Lou. Hey, I got a story for you. But I do think that God sends people into our lives that will expose us and that will cause us to come face to face with what we've been running from. This is why, for me, when I started asking the question, why does this person bother me? Why does this person irritate me so much? What are they telling me about myself? What are they trying to pull out of me? When I stopped and I started asking myself those questions, like I did for this guy at the gym, those are really hard questions to ask because you're forced to confront those things that you've been running from. But when you do that, for me in my life, when I've stopped and I've allowed myself to confront all the things that I've been pretending weren't true, I felt a greater wholeness within me. It's as if there was this healing that took place because now I could actually deal with that. Okay, why am I so hard on myself? Why aren't I able to show grace to myself? Why can't I show a little more kindness towards myself? And then that extends outward, like, well, if I'm not showing grace to myself, how can I then show grace to other people in my life? And when I started asking these questions, and man, that will transform your life. That will change who you are. That will change what you believe about yourself. That will change how you treat other people. It'll change how you view God. Because rather than God coming trying to punish you or trying to say, ha, look at what you're hiding. I want to bring this out. I want to drag this out to make you feel bad about yourself. What you actually see is that God is bringing it to the surface to actually bring healing to your life, to make you a more integrated and whole and loving person so that you can have greater love for yourself and for the world around you. So what I want to do this morning is I want to celebrate Eucharist, the good gift of Christ. And it's this reminder that we do here at the church on a regular basis that reminds us of the reconciliation that God brings through Jesus. This reconciliation of God restoring us to himself that took place on the cross. And as you come forward, as you take the bread, as you dip it into the cup, the invitation is for you to bring your full self to the table this morning. So are there any parts of your story that you've been running from? Any parts of your story that you've been pretending these aren't true? And any parts that you've been trying to leave behind, any parts that you've been trying to bury and push down, the offer of Christ is for you to bring that part of your story and leave it at the foot of the cross. Is there anything that happened 15, 20, 30 years and you've locked it away? You've Area 51 that thing. They put a barbed wire, an electric fence around it, thinking no one will ever find out about this. But the only thing it's done is it's caused you to put up an armor around yourself. And you no longer can be vulnerable around others. You no longer let others in because you've put such a blockade around your soul. Or are there any parts of your past, of where you came from, where you were raised, the religion that you used to be a part of, the family that you used to be, decisions that you once made in life? They're a part of your story, but you've been looking at them with disdain, wishing, oh, I wish that wasn't part of me. The offer of Christ is for you to bring that to the table this morning. Own it. Acknowledge it. It's what has brought you to this moment today. You don't have to like it, but it is a part of your story. And as you come forward, and as you own it all, the promise is that God will be there in the midst of it. And that God can take all the shame, the guilt, the lack of grace that we've been harboring within us, the anger that we've been channeling at others. God can take all of it and redeem it and restore it and make you whole. Let me pray here for us this morning. God, we come here this morning. And God, so often there are parts of our stories that we try to hide. God, that we try to separate from ourselves. God, that we try to bury, to keep locked away. And so, God, I pray that this morning that we would stop running. God, if there are any parts of our stories that are bringing us shame, God, that are causing us to look upon ourselves with anger, with a lack of grace, God, I pray that as we own those parts, God, as we integrate them into our full stories, that your Spirit would do a healing work in our lives. God, that we would no longer live as divided people, but that we would live as people who are whole. God, people who are restored. God, I believe that your desire, your deepest longing for all of us is that we would be fully integrated humans. And that we wouldn't live a separated and divided, a conflicted life, but rather that we would live in wholeness. God, that we would live with a belief about ourselves that brings us peace. God, that we would show true grace for ourselves. God, that we would be able to extend that grace to others. So God, just as you sent Nathan to David, I ask that you continue bringing people into our lives. God, people who disturb us, people who irritate us. I know it's not an easy prayer, but God, as we stop and as we get curious as to why others irritate us, God, may your Spirit reveal more of our soul to ourselves. God, that we would be able to fully see the wounds and the hurts that we've been carrying with us that cause us to live these divided lives. And so I pray this morning as we come forward, God, if there's anything we've been running from, God, may we have the courage to bring that story, that part of ourselves to the table here today. And may you redeem that part. God, may you bring a healing. God, just as you brought a healing to David's life, I ask that you might bring a healing to our lives here this morning. We trust that you are a God that can take every part of who we are and redeem it. Use it for your glory, God. So we pray, we ask all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.